Well, Bruce Feldman put together a list, and boy, we couldn't disagree with it more. We talked top 10 coaches plus winner and losers of the offseason right here on The Three Technique.
One man. Goodbye. Hello, Heisman.
20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to another off-season edition of The Three Technique, a college football podcast here at the intersection of the X's and O's and the Jimmies and the Joes. I'm Mitch Mason, Trey Reeves, Garrett Turney, all with you on a fantastic spring evening here in North Texas. And fellas, listen, sports media has a propensity to put out lists that are nothing but clickbait. Bruce Feldman sometimes will do that, but generally I think he sticks to the straight and narrow. But boy, when it came to his top 25 coaches in college football that he put out in an article on The Athletic, specifically the top 10, had us raising some eyebrows. We believe there's a glaring omission to this list. Trey, if a former student of yours turned in homework that looked as incomplete as this list, what would you give it?
Probably a solid C minus. I'm going to give some grace. I'm going to give some completion effort here.
Internet.
I'm going to go to bat for Bruce a little bit here because I don't think that he is, like you said, typically a clickbaity guy. And we, to tease our content tonight, we put together our own top five list. And I don't know about you guys, but it was both difficult and exciting to put together a top five list because of the power vacuum that I think now exists in college football with Nick Saban gone, with Jim Harbaugh off to the NFL. It was a very easy number one. And then I think you could make a lot of arguments for two through however deep you want to go. I think it's up for debate because there's only three coaches in college football now that have ever won a national championship. And I think two of those are well past their peak. You could argue Bruce did put one of those two at number two. That's, I think, where a lot of the disagreement started. And I fully disagree with that. But it's a difficult task right now with no clear front runners. A lot of the guys that we took for granted, 2 for 10, are now either off to the NFL or have even been fired from their jobs in recent years. So there's a clear power vacuum. And putting this together got me really excited for the next few years of college football, seeing how it all gets sorted out.
Does seem like a lot of opening, a lot of green grass. Maybe to tease the glaring omission is out there. Real estate available for claim. Garrett, we're going to get into the top 10 list here just momentarily. But as you look at this, you feel like this is kind of the dearth of the off season, or do you think it's truly as wide open as what Trey is saying it is?
It's definitely wide open, and there's a lot of speculation and stuff, but I do think that there's a few coaches who have separated themselves from the pack. And also, you have to, and this will be something that we get into when we give our own list, but you have to honor what people have done, and especially recently within the past 5 years or so, but also over the last 10 to 20, there are a couple coaches that are on our list that, you know, they've been doing this for a little bit, and I think you have to honor what they've done. Honor some of that historical legacy, especially when they've had success in the last couple of years. I'm excited to break this down and look at this because I could not disagree with the list that was put out anymore. And I think that I'm excited to kind of go do some revision to put it in my grading terms. I think that, you know, he's probably not, you know, making lists quite at a high school level yet. And he probably needs to work on his list making skills. Because this would be some remediation for me, where I'd say, "Whoa, something went wrong. Did you not eat this morning? Did you forget to pack a snack? What happened? Why was this list so bad?"
The system failed, Bruce, on this one. What we might have to do is put together one of those Twitter tier lists based off of this. Because, yeah, listen, is it maybe as bad as what we're joking it is? not necessarily. I think there is some, oh shoot, I forgot that was due this morning to this list. I think that's right. Fair to say. And so we'll get into that in just a second. But guys, of course, as you hear these teams on this list, maybe one of them is your favorite team. Maybe that makes you think I need more merch. Off season's rolling along, but we got March Madness right around the corner. College baseball season is up and running. Guys on this show may be fans of one of only two teams that are undefeated. No big deal. But if you're in need of that college merch, you can head on over to the good brand, homefieldapparel.com. 3TechPod is your code for 15% off your entire order. Or if you have purchased from them before, no worries. We've got you still. Head on over to our social media at 3TechPod. You can find a link that is personalized to this show. It gets you the same discount, and it will obviously give you that discount and support the show. So without further ado, guys, list looks something like this, courtesy Bruce Feldman. Kirby Smart starts off at number one. We've got Dabo Swinney in there at number two. I think we're going to come back to him. Lance Leipold has upset everybody. He's jumped all the way up to number three. Kalen DeBoer, comfy number four. Ryan Day comes in at number five. You got Brian Kelly, James Franklin at six and seven. Kyle Whittingham, sneaky, in there at number eight. Lincoln Riley and his dry brisket up at number nine. And Mike Norvell, the much ballyhooed Fighting Knowles, at number 10. Notable omissions, we'll get to in a second, but I want kind of just your first reaction. Go back to when I sent this article out in our group chat. Garrett, lead us off. That first name that you were drawn to.
I cannot believe Dabo Swinney's sitting at two. And I know what I just said. I realize I said you got to honor what people have done, but it really seems like Dabo kind of found his way through a championship and has been trying to ride some good graces since. For me personally, I think the hard thing to measure with Dabo Swinney is the fact that he hasn't really adjusted to the modern game, right? And I know that's crazy because he just won a championship, a few years ago, and I guess it's a few more than it seems like. But you know, this is a new game, right? This is a new game with the transfer portal, new game with NIL, and he has not embraced it. He has been extremely publicly against it. We broke a lot of that down on our Clemson being sort of the offseason losers episode that we did last time, but I mean, man, it just seems like, you know, he's not willing to adjust to the current game. And so if you're telling me, oh, these are the best coaches currently coaching, then, you know, I don't think you can put him nearly as high. If we're going to talk about best coaches the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, sure, I guess you could put him up there on the list somewhere. But I just don't think that right now he's really in that. Maybe I wouldn't be upset with the top 10, right? Maybe if you put him down 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there, that might, you know, I can kind of justify it. He's still not a bad coach. It's not like he forgot how to coach. I still think he's one of the better culture builders in terms of just getting his guys in and knowing, hey, this is kind of what we do and what we play for. He's a good culture builder, but I don't think he's done anything recently, at least with the transfer portal or with, you know, NIL, to really prove that he's ready for right now.
We talked about it in our losers segment from the last show, right? Has yet to take a transfer in this class. This past season was the first year since, I'm forgetting which season it was, 2013, 2014, that they hadn't won at least 10 games in the season. I mean, it seems like the boat's going in the wrong direction. Trey, I don't know how you feel about Dabo. Obviously, on paper, it looks great. 170 wins, 43 losses, 2 national titles. He's won a bunch of ACC championship games, but it kind of feels like we're resting on our laurels a little bit, putting him at number two.
Yeah, he's a guy that's definitely past his prime. And if you think he's going to be able to recreate the magic that he had in the mid-2010s at Clemson, I have some oceanfront property in Arizona to sell you, because the odds that he is going to both hit on two quarterbacks in a row, the caliber of Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence, and have all the talent that he had on those teams around him in the transfer portal era, when he does not want to commit to the transfer portal, is just astronomically low. It is not going to happen like it's happened for him in the past. Could he still dominate the ACC and get an auto bid to the playoff every year? Absolutely. Is he going to get skunked when he gets there, or when he gets to the semifinal or quarterfinal round? Yeah, I think so, because of the just comparative talent. Dabo was always the outlier at Clemson, right? Like, you would look at all these lists, you look at the recruiting rankings and the talent composites and say, okay, you need to be in this range to consider yourself a national championship contender, except for that one time Dabo Swinney did it. That's like the outlier. And on the one hand, you could say that makes you a great coach. But on the other hand, you could say, oh, you were really relying on NFL caliber and all pro caliber quarterbacks in Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson. The odds that those guys are walking back through the door and having the defensive line and receiver talent around them, just really, really low, in my opinion. On the rest of the list, I will say the reason I give Bruce some slack here, I definitely agree it does have the last minute, my dog ate my homework vibes. I'm just going to write something down on a piece of notebook paper that I found on the floor. But there was a group of guys that we would just pencil in as the top six or seven for so long on these types of offseason lists, right? Your Jimbo Fishers, your Urban Meyers a few years ago, these guys that had won a national championship, Dabo Swinney even. And it's really hard to sort that out in a new era. So when we were making our lists, you know, guys that have come close for so long, I've just kind of soured on them naturally, right? Like the Brian Kellys of the world, the James Franklins of the world, these guys that, you know, winning 9 and 10 games a year in college football is really, really difficult. But I'm kind of in a moment where with those guys, I've seen your ceiling, so to speak. I think those guys have maybe hit their ceiling, where some of the guys that I include in my top five, they either are hitting a similar ceiling at way more difficult places to win than Notre Dame and LSU and Penn State, or they might be, you know, not quite to that top yet. And I'm trying to buy stock as low as I possibly can right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it does feel like some of those guys, you can maybe question if they have their fastball anymore, right? And Dabo, I think, is leading that bandwagon. Now, I read off the top 10 notable omissions real quick before we get back to the top 10 include Steve Sarkisian, who's got at 11th, Chris Kleiman's at 12th, Lane Kiffin is at 21. Willie Fritz, Eli Drinkwitz also stood out to me as not ranked. They, quote, just missed the cut. But guys, nowhere in the entire Word doc that Bruce Feldman submitted to The Athletic was one Dan Lanning. That seems rather criminal considering Oregon is easily a top five program in the country right now. That had to have been the piece of the paper that the dog ate, right? Like he just forgot to recopy.
Well, and the rest of the college football world to disagree with him because he had to shoot down rumors left and right that he was leaving Oregon. Right. And there were these big time programs. Yeah, they're big time programs that were trying to chase after him and get him to come over. And so, look, you know, he may not make this top 10 list, but when it came time to hire a new coach for some big time programs, he was making everybody's short list and was probably, you know, kind of getting sick of it. He's like, I've got all the money I need up here. I'm transitioning to a new conference. You know, I've got all the opportunity in the world in front of me. He believes that the grass is plenty green in Eugene. That's harder to say than you think, but he believes all that, and which is great. And, you know, whether you agree with him or not, you can at least know that he's bought into his program and that everybody else wanted him to buy into theirs. And so, you know, I just don't get leaving him off. You know, you could argue, like, is he three? Is he four? Is he two? But I just don't understand how he left it. You're right. It does seem like the whole he just forgot. It kind of seems to me like this was one of those where you and your buddies sit around and you name, like, the top 10 of all time for something and nobody really looks anything up. You just kind of start, you know, shooting the breeze and like, oh, it's like that guy. And then like 2 days later, you'll go, oh, wait, how did we forget him? It's kind of what that felt like to me was he was just kind of shooting the breeze with his buddies like, hey, who are some good coaches? And then nobody mentioned Dan Lanning.
And I'll, again, play a little bit of devil's advocate. I think it's an awful omission. He should be top 15 at worst, top 10 lock to me. But he has only been a coach for 2 years and he has yet to make a college football playoff, right? So the reasons. I think the most obvious reason is what you guys are talking about. He literally just forgot. And that's embarrassing for a writer of his caliber, but we all make mistakes.
I would like you right now to defend PJ Fleck and Jason Candle's inclusion.
Also mentioning not making the playoff, Lance Leipold, anyone? Has he been a head coach in a playoff game?
We're going to get there in just a second.
I'll talk about Lance in a second.
I love Lance Leipold. I'm just saying, like, if we're gonna say, oh, well, he didn't make the playoff. I'm like, yeah, what a bum.
I'm just trying to maybe put myself in Bruce's brain.
Right.
How you can maybe justify it outside of just forgetting, because that seems like a really bad look for a rider of his caliber.
Hey, in his defense, it's the middle of the season, right? We got big rivalry games next. The offseason. He had weeks on this.
He might be on a cruise to Turks and Caicos right now, man. He has other things.
He could be working on that spring break tan right now. You mentioned Lance Leipold at number three. Kalen DeBoer, also a fellow, you know, lower level coach who had a ton of success, is right there at four. Leipold has six D3 national titles. Kalen DeBoer won three NAIA national titles. But no matter what level they've been at, they've had a ton of winning success. And it seems like you're getting ready to defend them at three and four. I'm not going to really take issue with that.
Yeah, and go ahead, Garrett.
I was going to say, I like Leipold at three. I honestly, I didn't put him that high, but I like the stones to put him there because he's a great coach. The only reason I think you can't put him up that high is because he hasn't really won at that D1 level yet. I mean, he's done well, and he's turned around an abysmal program at Kansas, but you can't – I don't think at this point you can say that he's done enough to justify being third on the list ahead of guys who are – definitely turning that program in the right direction. Even guys, you know, again, like Lanning, who, yeah, wasn't a head coach at any certain level, but he came straight from being a coordinator to running a big time program and putting him in the spotlight.
I don't disagree. Trey, you ready to fire the salvo here?
Yeah, I can definitely do it. Do we want to just jump into our top fives?
Sure. Let's go ahead. Start. Take it from your top five and go ahead and defend old Lance there on the plains.
All right. Well, I'm going to start with the obvious number one. I think it's a consensus number one for us in Kirby Smart. And we don't have to spend a ton of time talking about
Kirby. Zero complaints.
Yeah, we don't have to spend a ton of time talking about him because I think it's obvious. I will say he is the only current college football coach in my mind that could maybe one day challenge Saban as the greatest of all time, just because of how young he's getting started. I think that's the only thing debatable about Kirby at this point. He's great. My number two is where I start to get a little spicy from you guys. I've got Ryan Day at number two, and here's why I have Ryan Day at number two. Number one, you can count on one hand pretty much the number of losses that he has not to Michigan in his coaching career.
Sure.
He had a Michigan problem. I will fully give you
that. That's a big asterisk, yeah.
Who amongst us did not have a Michigan problem in the college football world over the past 2 years, other than Kirby Smart, okay? Like, we're giving this guy so much crap, and rightfully
TCU.
So.
TCU.
TCU did.
To be fair.
But we're giving this guy so much crap for losing those three games, and rightfully so. You should, if you lose to your rival 3 years in a row, your fan base is going to start to question you. But I just want to tap the brakes, and I want to put him here because can you legitimately tell me on either of your lists, is there a guy on the recruiting trail or on the field in the fall that you would be more surprised if they lost a recruit or lost an individual game than Ryan Day?
Other than Kirby Smart,
other than Kirby, obviously Kirby's in a league of his own.
Yeah, right, other than
probably Kirby. Not. Probably not.
So that's why I have him at number two, because legitimately for me, every time he loses a recruit or a game on the football field, it's a legitimate surprise. And I know you're going to throw this past big game back at me, like you really were surprised for the third time in a row. It's still legitimately surprising with the talent that he has on the field. And if you put a better quarterback on that team, they have a much better chance to win. He didn't have the quarterback this year. I get it. There's room to debate that he's not number two, and I get all the arguments. I really do, but the man is a missed field goal away from winning a national championship, and I don't think this is really much of a debate if that happens.
I wonder if, you know, obviously he's got the born on third.
And I get that. Like, that's a legitimate concern, but I think he's done enough to fix his defense and get just a more tough mentality on his team. That I'm willing to be past that, me personally.
Right. Well, in the few mistakes that he's made in his tenure, right? saw the defense was absolute garbage. Had no idea what they were doing. They get blitzed by Michigan in the first loss of the big game. So what does he do? He goes out and he gets Jim Knowles. Suddenly the defense is one of the best in the country, right? Had a bunch of really good quarterbacks. Last year was a miss. So what does he do? He goes out into the portal. He gets Will Howard, who at least has the potential to be a very good, if not elite, quarterback if he takes that next step. He's doing the right things. He's patching all the holes, right? We're bailing water out of the ship. I think it's going to be one of those things for Ryan Day that until he does it, until he's hoisting that trophy over his head on the national championship stage, there's always going to be this kind of negative aura around him that, yeah, but he has all the recruits, but he can't close. He has the ace coaching staff, but it doesn't matter, you know, in that semifinal game, etc. I think he's just going to have to do it in order to beat, you know, beat those non-elite allegations. And those are probably fair, to be quite honest.
Well, and yeah, he's also being judged on a different standard. And maybe that's not fair, but he's also being judged as the coach at Ohio State, which Ohio State, one of the best universities, longstanding good, you know, football program. We have no issue there, obviously. But if you're the guy at the head of that program, it comes with different expectations, right? There's and a lot of what I'm going to talk about in my list has to do with like roster construction and like playing the current game. Ohio State does a pretty decent job at kind of recruiting itself. They've built such a great system that, you know, all you have to do is just say, hey, Ohio State came knocking and they're going to probably get, you know, consideration for most of the top players anyways. And for me, when I'm looking at what Ryan Day has done, I don't think he's advanced the program from when he took over. I really just don't think that he has. Like they're, you know, they went from being, you know, national championship, you know, and having all of that, to they're still in contention, but I mean, he hasn't beaten Michigan since before COVID. And that's like a weird thing to think about. Like, it's not just three straight losses, but they didn't play the COVID year. So you have to go all the way back to 2019 to find the time you beat them. And if you're an Ohio State coach, that's not a small thing. You have to, you know, you have to find ways to beat Michigan. You're not going to beat them every year, but you can't lose three in a row. And you certainly can't go that long without being able to say, hey, we won that game. And that's what we've done. In addition to, you know, coming up short, and you know, he's won some playoff games, which is great. But coming up short, not quite getting all the way up there. And, you know, yeah, he was a field goal away, but, you know, ifs, ands, and buts are candies and nuts and stuff. So, you know, I'm not going to play, you know, the game quite there, because you could play that game for Mike Norvell and say, well, if his quarterback didn't get hurt, maybe they were the best team last year, would have had a chance to beat Michigan. You know, there's a lot of sort of kind of ifs and should-haves and maybes and everything else that we could throw into the list. And I'm not quite sure that I want to go there for all of those guys, but he's a great coach. I left him just off of my list.
Yeah. And all those arguments are completely valid, and I definitely understand where they come from. I would just remind people that it's not always easy to sustain these great programs, right? How great was Florida State for the longest time? And then look at where they were until Mike Norvell picked it back up, right? How good was Miami for the longest time? And look at where they are. It's not as easy on paper as it is to sustain these generationally great programs. Ohio State might be on a different level than those two. I'm fully willing to concede that. But it's not as easy as it looks on paper. And that's all I'll say about Ryan Day. Going through the rest of my list, I have Lance Leipold at number three, and I pretty confidently have him, because after those top two, there's just such a vacuum. I don't like the standard operating procedure for so long was just to put the guys that had won a national championship. I'm not going to put Dabo in my top five. Spoiler alert. I'm also not going to put Mac Brown in my top five. Spoiler alert. I think they're both well past their prime. And, you know, there's just guys I want to buy a little bit more stock in right now. Lance Leipold has won wherever he's gone, and he's been a nothing short of a miracle worker to get Kansas to back-to-back bowl games. I know the defense is not where it needs to be. It might never be, to be honest, in Kansas, because the caliber of athlete that they're going to be able to attract to Lawrence, Kansas, maybe after their stadium renovations are done, they get an uptick in that. But the defense might not ever be elite. That's fine. He's winning with what he has, and he's finding a way to be competitive in a place that it is historically impossible to be competitive. That is extremely impressive to me. I think if you put him in a blue blood program, they would take off instantly. I've got Kalen DeBoer at number four. He's won everywhere he's been. He's won national championships at lower levels. The man just knows how to coach. I think he's going to be a slam dunk at Alabama. You saw what he did taking over a program that was in the dumps at Washington, getting into the playoff within 2 years, and he's willing to work the portal. And then at number five, I've got Kyle Whittingham. And I know, Mitch, you said that he snuck in the Bruce Feldman's list. I think he's the most underrated coach in college football with what he's done at Utah. I know I've been the resident Utah hater on this show just because I think they might lose two games. But the fact that they have moved, you know, when I did my research, when Kyle Whittingham took over in the mid-2000s, they were a premier program, not just in the West Coast, but in the whole country. If we have a 12-team playoff for those years, they're getting top four seeds out of the Mountain West, out of the early Pac-12. And they're the golden standard of a team moving up a level in competition from the G5 to the Power Five. They're what every other program that's tried to do that, TCU, Cincinnati, Houston, all these programs that have tried to move up, want to be like Utah, competitive for their conference title, even if they're not getting the five-star talent that other people in their conference are getting. They're still beating the crap out of those guys with the people that Kyle Whittingham is coaching up. I think he's the most underrated coach in college football.
And that's what I meant when I said he was sneaky at number eight. Yeah. I think he's just unsung, right? Very, very flying under the radar there, but absolutely belongs in the top 10. I just excluded him from my own personal top five, but man, the job that he's done at Utah has been really good. Garrett, let's move to you and your list. Give us your top five and maybe pick a name out of that hat.
Yeah, so obviously we all have Kirby at one. That's not going to be debatable, I don't think, for any of us. I've got Mike Norvell at two, and it has a lot to do with the modern game. And, you know, this is kind of what I'm saying is being able to adjust to where you're supposed to be for today's football, I think, is where Mike Norvell really succeeds. And I do think that, you know, if it wasn't for an unfortunate quarterback injury, they probably were playing in the national championship game last year. They were that good on defense. They were the only, I think, defense that had a chance to stand up against Michigan and even compete for that. And so I think that that was something that was just a little unfortunate at the end of the season. He didn't need a quarterback, though, to go on and win the conference. Like, they still went on and won the conference, had a plenty good roster. And that has a lot to do with what he's doing in the transfer portal. I went back and looked at it, and I went to see, like, hey, how good are some of his classes in the transfer portal? And since he's kind of taking that, you know, stock up and you know, Florida State started to look a little bit better, he's gone from 10th in the transfer portal in 22, 6th last year, 4th in this year's transfer portal class. Love what he's doing. I think he's doing incredible things. I think he gets his players. And look, if he's identifying his guys and putting them in his system, I think it's only a matter of time until he brings Florida State all the way back from, you know, kind of cratering after Jimbo left. And so that's why I have him at number two. Love what he's doing. Truly just, I mean, an injury away, I think, last year. Kalen DeBoer, number three. We already kind of talked about him. There's a reason why they hired him at Alabama, and it's not because he's a long shot or a hot name or something like that. He's a good coach, knows how to coach. And I think after this initial roster kind of tumult goes on, I think you will see him kind of fill out his roster, get his guys in. It might take a year or two to really get his guys in the system, but I do think you'll see Alabama kind of return to glory pretty soon, which, you know, all of college football rolls their eyes at. But, you know, it is what it is. And then, yeah, I have Kyle Whittingham on my list at number four. I mentioned it off the top. I wanted to honor kind of legacy and what coaches have done. And Kyle Whittingham, I think, is one of the more accomplished coaches currently in college football. Everyone's going to look at last year and just say, oh, well, they weren't very good last year. Look, I get it, but when you're looking at what, you know, Barnes and Johns were doing at the quarterback position for him, it was not much. They were not doing very much outside of the USC game, which, I mean, Barnes is playing against USC's defense. That's also not a defense. And so, you know, it was kind of a heroic game out of nowhere. But you look at him, he's had a little bit of a bowl issue recently, but he has two conference championships in the last couple of years. And he, I mean, won most of the bowl games to start his career, has a couple of big time bowl wins. Won a Fiesta Bowl, won a Sugar Bowl. So he's done so much over the course of his career, and he's still coaching. And by the way, moving on into a new conference where I think that there's a decent chance he could find himself into the playoff next year. I really like what he's doing and what's going on there. And then at five, I did have Dan Lanning, and you know, I can't believe he got left off of the original list, but I'm letting Dan Lanning sit in there. It has only been a couple of years. He hasn't made the playoff. you know, but those are pretty high standards. He has taken Oregon back to a point of, I think, national relevance. And I think in this new conference, I would expect him to push. The one thing I will say is all the guys on my list, I don't think I would be shocked at all if each of those five guys are coaching in the playoff next year.
There's certainly a good chance, right? I think as we get into the season and Oregon, you know, starts winning games, might have to start a bit. Oh my gosh, look at this upstart out of nowhere head coach Dan Lanning, the name off of someone's couch, just winning games in the Big Ten. Might have to.
We've been known. Okay, we've been known.
All right, my top five, Kirby Smart, Kalen DeBoer, Mike Norvell, the top three. I've got Dan Lanning at number four. That's more projection than I think maybe his current status. But, boy, you look at the direction that Oregon program is headed in, the way he's recruiting, the way he's getting buy-in. I mean, hey, grass is plenty green in Eugene. I think Oregon is about to be a perennial national title contender. And then at 5A and 5B, I'll admit I cheated a little bit. I've got Ryan Day and Steve Sarkisian. Nothing against Lance Leipold, nothing against Kyle Whittingham, but Ryan Day, we've obviously talked about. Steve Sarkisian, guys, had to include him on this list, in my personal opinion, because of the job that he's done at Texas. When you have Kirk Herbstreit, when you have the national powers calling out a program and not only saying that it's hard to win there, but calling it a toxic environment and actively steering coaching candidates away from the 40 acres, to me, that says that you're doing a pretty good job instilling a confidence, a culture, and actually taking talent and developing it. Now, does Sarkisian have the most resources maybe out of anybody on this list? Absolutely. I will give you that, right? If you're going to say that Ryan Day was born on third base, honestly, I think you have to say that a little bit about Steve Sarkisian. Let's just call a spade, right? There is nothing that he asks for that gets turned down at the 40 acres. And yet that didn't mean that anyone else that came before him was winning football games. I mean, everybody after Mac Brown found one excuse after another, another way to lose easy football games. And Sarkisian has come along. Not only has he actually gotten the most out of the talent that's in Austin, which they've never had a talent problem, but he's also instilling a toughness, a nature where they are committed to finishing football games. I think the trajectory of the Texas Longhorns is nothing but up. And, you know, as someone who went to the school in College Station, pains me to say that, right? I'm not excited necessarily about what I think the results could be on the field in Kyle Field this November. So I think to flip the momentum in the Lone Star State on its head, where the Aggies had it all after COVID, Orange Bowl, playoff favorite, even a national title favorite on some boards, and to completely flip that, take over the Lone Star State, certainly up in the DFW Metroplex, and now they are the perennial team in the state. That in and of itself is extremely impressive, let alone what he's done to obviously get that team back to a playoff contention. So, I had to give Sarkisian a nod there. I think, you know, obviously there's a reason why these topics are debated on sports shows, right? There's no right answer. Leipold, Whittingham, I love their inclusion on these lists. You know, interesting names down that board as well for Bruce Feldman. I think of Hugh Freeze, Jed Fish appearing on the list. Jonathan Smith at Michigan State getting a little love, number 22 on that list. I'm excited to see what he can do up there for the Spartans in East Lansing. I talk about a dumpster fire that he's taken over.
So one quick thing on Sark, and I do have him in my honorable mentions, but he will slide all the way up my board next year if he does it again. That's kind of my only thing that I want to see.
Yeah,
we saw Texas beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, and they're back and everything else. We were all convinced, right? Everyone's convinced Texas is back and everything's perfect again, and then it wasn't. And because, you know, it's hard to win anywhere you are. It's hard to win, especially now if you're at Texas and you're moving into the SEC. That's going to be tricky. And if he goes out here and he goes and wins 10 or 11 games and makes a playoff and maybe even wins a playoff game in Austin, then great. He's going to be number two, number three on my list next year. And I have no issue saying that whatsoever. But for me, I want to see it one more time. One other guy that we haven't really mentioned on this that I think should also be an honorable mention. And again, we don't like him as a person necessarily, but Lane Kiffin's doing a really good job at Ole Miss. Like, he really is doing a good job. He's building a heck of a roster. He's doing a really good job with what he needs to do to win there. And again, like, if you've watched this at all for any length of time, you know that we're not Lane Kiffin fans, but Ole Miss is a dangerous program right now. They might be the favorites in the SEC next year.
They are. They're trying to buck the trend. They beat James Franklin and the Penn State Nittany Lions, formerly my beloved Penn State Nittany Lions. I mean, gosh, I was hoodwinked by the James Franklin cult once again. I won't make that mistake twice. Going to root for them for sure. I mean, I love Penn State. Going to root for them, but not believing that James Franklin is an elite level coach. Guys, you know, as we finish up this list, we'd first of all love to hear from you. So fill up the comments. Let us know who your top five would be, where you love this list, where you take issue with it. Would absolutely love to hear from you at 3TechPod on all of our social platforms. Guys, we did just deal with daylight savings time coming back, the body clock. I don't know about you guys. My day started at 4:30 body clock time. I'm feeling that a little bit, but plus side in all of this is we get an extra hour tacked on to the end of the day. And Trey, there are plenty of fun activities to do in the evening sun.
Oh yeah. If you are like me, your seasonal depression is now gone because it is not dark when you get home. And that means you can do fun activities like pickleball. And our friends at Baller have just the gear for you. They've got paddles. They've got backpacks. They've got moisture wicking hats, all the stuff that you need as the weather heats up to heat your game up. Check them out, ballerpickleball.com, ballerpickleball.com, and use our code 3TechPod to get 10% off your entire order at their website, ballerpickleball.com.
I thought that was a pretty smooth transition, I'm not going to lie. Also not going to lie, I've got to go. So we are going to talk winners and losers here very, very quickly. Miami getting our winner of the offseason nomination for part two here. And it comes down to one simple thing for me. And maybe this is where you start the reel. Cam Ward, it's all on you, buddy. If you aren't able to elevate this program to the fan expectation, and I think a lot of expectation from around the national scene as well, there is so much talent on that Miami roster. And yet Mario Cristobal has found multiple ways to absolutely waste games away. But now he's got a potentially elite level quarterback. And I say potentially because Trey and I were on that bandwagon just a year too early. Didn't exactly pay off last year either. But boy, you see the flashes. You see the moments where you're going, dude, that guy is special. And given an elite wide receiving core, given the offensive line that he's going to be playing in front of him, I don't know. Miami didn't scare me offensively last season, except for the game where they beat my team. But other than that, I wasn't really doubting those defenses going up against him. I kind of figured you can get a stop. This year, though, a lot of hope banking on Cam Ward. He's looking good in spring practice.
I want Cam Ward to be good so, so bad, but I got to see it to believe it, man. Like, he was so good at Incarnate Word. I was all in on the hype train with you at Washington State, and just two letdowns in a row. I got to see it to believe it. But if he can channel that energy from a few years back at the FCS level, look out, because the ACC is wide open. Florida State is definitely your favorite going into the year, but they've got some question marks as well with all the talent that they're losing to the draft. So sure. I'm interested in Miami. I got to see it to believe it for both Cam Ward and the Hurricanes. Unless they're playing Texas A&M every week. If they can play a Jimbo Fisher coach Texas A&M every week, 12-0 national championship, book it.
That is whatever. But Miami, look, it's time to put up or shut up at this point. We're back, and the U and NIL and everything. This is your era to dominate in, and they just haven't so far. And look, Cam Ward, he might be that quarterback. I think he's pretty good. I think he could get there. For me, you know, a big thing that I'd like to look at during spring practices and try to highlight is how well he can kneel the football, because that's something they'll probably have to figure out how to do before they're going to take this program to the next
level.
Will
he override his coach that calls a play? Will he get in the huddle and just
right,
say,
like,
off that?
Yeah, does he get to go and say,
here we go?
I'm looking up at the clock. I'm looking at the play clock. It's not heading up. I should just down the football. immediately. If he can do that, they might actually have a chance. And they don't have to win all the games. They really only got to win like 10 to get into the playoff, probably. So if you can win 10, maybe 11, you can sneak into a playoff. And, you know, that could happen. So you don't have to beat Florida State. You don't have to be better than them. You just got to win enough to get you there. It's time, Miami. Got to do something.
But you do have to beat Florida, and I think he can do that, hopefully.
That shouldn't be too hard this year.
That's going to be a defining game for both of those teams right out of the gate.
It could be, yeah.
It absolutely is.
Is that week one? Is that the first week of the season next year?
I don't know. I'm looking at the first week.
I'm on it.
Yeah, well, you look that up. Garrett, let's flip the page to the loser this offseason. This pains me. Not only because Trey did the research and showed how this was going to be, you know, your next blue blood program, how Kansas State has been robbed of multiple national title appearances potentially, but they really have been fun to root for over these last couple of seasons, right? I mean, every man a Wildcat, like, who doesn't want to be on that bandwagon, the Little Apple, Manhattan, Kansas? But gosh, guys, they lose 15 players to the transfer portal. They only get 6 back. And when you look at some of those names, it hurts to look at that list, right? You're replacing key pieces in your secondary. You're replacing Trayshawn Ward goes to Boston College. What are we doing? I thought that was a great 1-2 punch with DJ Giddens, but Ward didn't like the split that he had. He's headed up to the Northeast. And then obviously you're replacing Will Howard, your quarterback, who's off to win a national championship at Ohio State. So, you know, I know they love what they've got in Avery Johnson, who's kind of Thor-esque in his look a little bit.
Sure.
You know, I'm not saying that Kansas State's going to be bad next season. I'm not saying that they can't be dangerous, but I am saying when you look on paper, I don't love what they've got coming in versus what they've got going out. I feel like if they've been able to build one more season, you know, we're talking Big 12 championship again. We're talking college football playoff berth.
Well, and maybe their biggest loss is their offensive coordinator and the fact that he's, leaving to go coach at A&M. And, that might be why all these players are leaving is because, you know, hey, that system worked and we know that it worked. But now he's not there and it doesn't matter who your players are around you. If you're not coached well, it's not going to go well for you at all. And I was looking it up, too. Might be even a little bit worse than, because I've only got 5 commits currently at Kansas State. Currently ranked at the 69th ranked transfer class. Very nice.
Not nice.
Not nice. Not nice.
not that nice, especially when you look up and they are currently staring up at UMass, Marshall, and Charlotte, to name a couple.
Sick. Don't sleep on Biff.
Sure. Okay.
It's America's football program right there.
You might have a point. But I don't think that's exactly where Kansas State wants to be, is staring up at some of those teams. So I don't think that there's a lot of hope at the moment, especially you have to consider too, like the overall landscape. Like, yeah, you just lost Texas and Oklahoma, but you're gaining a bunch of teams into this conference who are going to come in and compete. And, you know, as soon as the revolving door lets out 2 guys that were competing, you might be bringing in 3 more that will. So I'm not sure where Kansas State's massive optimism should come from right now, but you're right to put them in a loser for the offseason because they haven't done enough, I think, to retain their program and retain the optimism.
Big 12 is going to be so fun to watch this year, and K-State might end up on the end of that fun, but Avery Johnson's going to be fun too, man. I'm optimistic about him. Chris Klieman's a great coach. I'm not all the way out on the Wildcats. It might be a down year for a big bounce back in a couple years. And yes, Florida and Miami play in Gainesville, August 31st, week 1.
Come on with it.
Loser of that
game.
Come on
with it.
Gonna be
their season's shape. Over.
Their season's over. Like, you're not bouncing back from that.
Do you just like shoot the coach on site who loses? Like, because I mean, you're done at that point. You're not bringing the coach back.
Only if you can't find a rope to hang him from.
Gosh.
Oh, it's the state of Florida.
I don't even know where to go with that. Holy cow. I mean, the message boards are going to burn down, but goodness. Hopefully we keep it civil.
On the first fan boat out of town into the middle of that.
That's fair. That is very fair. Good episode, guys. I've got a fiance who would very much like me to pick her up at the airport, so I'm going to go do that. Right in at 3TechPod, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, we're there. We'd love to have you join the Jimmies and the Joes. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. For Trey Reeves, Garrett Turney, I'm Mitch Mason. Until next time, so long, everybody.